Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 302 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good, David. How are you?
What have you been up to the last few weeks?
As of about 20 minutes ago, just finished Dickinson season 2. I tried to get it finished before I came on the podcast and stuff because I had like one episode left this morning. I was like, I don't want to go on the podcast with one episode left. That would be a little bit annoying. but fantastic season. Another great Apple TV Plus thing. Hayley Steinfeld is really, really good in that role. I'm looking forward to seeing her in Hawkeye, the series where she's going to be playing Kate Bishop. I think there's a Bumblebee 2 happening as well. There's quite a lot going for her at the moment because I think I'm pretty sure Dickinson's got a season 3. Hawkeye is obviously going to probably do quite well for Disney Plus, and then she's got the Transformers saga and stuff, so she's doing pretty well for herself at the moment, which is great. This season really kind of opened things up a lot more, not in the way that like season 1 was stale or anything, but season 1 had a particular kind of goal and then season 2 kind of just expanded on things. The characters took a lot more sort of trips to different places as well in season 2. There's like this kind of funny spa episode and stuff with all the women and everything, while all the men go out and do all like, you know, the business stuff and everything. So that was pretty good. Things progressed quite well with her poetry this season as well. I'm not going to get into like what happened there because it'll be spoilers and stuff, but I can't remember the actor's name, but you know the guy who played Iron Fist?
Oh yeah.
And he was also in Game of Thrones. He's in this second season. He kind of gets involved with Emily's poetry and tries to get her work pushed forward. I don't want to say too much more than that.
Right,
so yeah. That's quite a big part of season 2. And there's this underlying kind of worry towards Emily. These other people telling Emily that like, oh, he's tried to do this before with other women and all he ended up doing was like getting together with them and kind of messing them about. And Emily was on the other side of like, no, he seems like a pretty good guy and everyone's trying to warn him about him, but he seems okay when we see him. And then that sort of progresses and stuff. So that's one of the really big things of season 2. But no, overall, a really good show. I really enjoyed it. And again, it's just half an hour. It's quick. It's impactful. And it's great television as well. And it's not just Emily that's a great character. Like, her parents are really interesting and a lot of the other characters are as well. So they do a lot more kind of relationship-y sort of stuff in the second season, but it works pretty good within the context of what it is and everything. So, but yeah, the main kind of big improvement, I suppose, of season 2 is just it's a lot more expanded. And I don't know, just tried to do more other different things, but still things that fit within what they're trying to do. Like, there's a few more sort of like church scenes and stuff, which are quite good, and that results in some interesting things. So yeah, pretty good season. I don't remember you saying if you haven't seen this show, have you?
I've seen some of the episodes of it, and I've seen a lot of season 1 and a few episodes of season 2 because I interviewed somebody about the season 2 stuff and I hadn't managed to get through the whole of season 1 before I needed to do the interview, so I skipped a few episodes. I didn't get to the end of season 1 and watched a few episodes of season 2, so I've seen odd bits and pieces of it. Really, really enjoyed it. It is a fun, interesting, different take on a sort of period drama. You know, it is technically a period, well, it's period comedy really, more than anything else, but it has very much a sort of modern CW-ish kind of sensibility to it as well. With the lead character feeling very much sort of more a modern character than a period character. It's almost like she's been airdropped into this sort of period world world, and the younger generation are sort of fighting back against the older generation to a certain extent about how they should manage their lives. It's really wonderful and really fun. I do think they've done an amazing job with it, and it looks stunning as well. I think they do a superb job just recreating the environments as well.
Yeah, something I've always said about the Apple TV Plus shows, the production values are there with all of the ones that at least I've seen so far. So that's been great. But yeah, it's sort of like if you made Downton Abbey for my age group, kind of. It's not to say I wouldn't enjoy Downton Abbey. I haven't even tried to watch it, but it's more aimed towards my age group. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the other thing I've been watching, The Mosquito Coast had its season one finale last week. Really, really solid show. Seven episodes are about an hour each. So like, you know, roughly 7 hours in total. The season finale was so tense and so sort of just kept me so kind of on the edge. It really, really is just Apple's Breaking Bad Ozark kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There was this sort of character chasing the main family throughout most of the season, and that got really, really intense. And when I look back on the seven episodes, I think, yeah, the first two to three are a little bit slow, but sort of set things up. And then things just continue to escalate from there. And they do this thing as well where their son finds a gun at this point, and he tries to use it in a few situations. And of course, because he's not really trained with firearms, it's that classic kind of thing of like a young person, not really like a teenager, is a little bit older than like a teenager. I think he's supposed to be roughly sort of my age maybe. But he finds a gun and he tries to like threaten a few different of these like cartel-esque sort of people following them. And that creates some particularly troublesome situations. The other interesting thing as well is because I think I mentioned this before, with the dad character played by Justin Theroux, him kind of constantly saying like, oh, we just need to do this, or we just need to do that, or we just need to get this boat or whatever. And like, once we get there, we'll be in sort of paradise. And they just keep getting in worse and worse trouble. You can see as the season goes on, especially with the mother, his, you know, the wife character, you can see it kind of on her face, almost in like a Skyler sort of way from Breaking Bad, and sort of like, okay, I'm starting to lose trust that what you're saying is going to happen. And you as the audience are kind of there as well, of like, come on, man, what have you got your family like into? He keeps promising this sort of promised land on a beach and you can do whatever you want and all that sort of stuff. But they just keep getting into situations where they almost die. It's funny with Justin's character how every time they get out of one of those situations and sort of move forward, he's like, hey, here we go, back on the road. And all of his family just slowly over the course of the season are like, okay, we're kind of with you. Like, it does get to a point where it's too far gone to where they can't really sort of turn back, because there is a few of those discussions as well of like, we don't really trust what's going on here and we want to kind of turn back. But at a certain point, it like that's just too far gone. And that creates some interesting scenarios as well, but really, really intense in certain scenes as well. So it's fantastic. It's renewed for season two, so I'm very much looking forward to that. It's just brilliant. Have you seen any of that?
I haven't got to it yet. It is one that is on my list of things that I need to sort of binge through when I've got rid of some of the other stuff. There's a mixture of things around right now, and I just find in the time. But yeah, it is one that I do want to sit and watch through, because I've loved a lot of the Apple series. I think they've done an amazing job with the shows on that network or on that broadcaster, and it is one that I do want to sit down and watch, definitely.
Cool. So that's most of what I've been up to, apart from some other things. How about you?
Well, I mean, Loki obviously is the big thing that's been around this week. First episode came out on Wednesday, because they're releasing it on Wednesdays just to be slightly different for a change. I loved the first episode of this. I think it's a very interesting and different setup to anything we've seen before. As I think most people know, it's obviously Loki is not around in the main MCU anymore, so the one that we're following is the variant that occurred during the events of Endgame, and the entire plotline is based upon the fact that, you know, he is not supposed to be there, he is not really supposed to exist. And I thought they handled that really well, and it was sort of really interesting what they did in terms of the messing around with the time, because there's this sort of time bureau that are these people that are control the true timeline. I really loved what they did with that. It's always a pleasure watching Tom Hiddleston play Loki. He's so amazing at it. And so to have him back, the first episode is very much a sort of setting the groundwork for where they go next. So I'm really interested to see what they do with the rest of the season from here on in. What do you think?
I loved it as well. Yeah, I really, really did. And this kind of goes to to something I've been mentioning a little bit in the past. You could possibly call it like brand trust. Because when I looked at the shows coming to Disney Plus and everything, Loki was pretty far down on my list because I'd never really been that invested in the character. And I thought like, oh, well, I'll watch it because I trust Marvel. I trust the MCU and Kevin Feige and what he's done. There's not much reason to think otherwise. I mean, other than a couple of films here and there that maybe didn't hit so well, and like Falcon and Winter Soldier was a bit slow in certain places. But, you know, 90% of the time when we have the MCU, which we've got, what, 11 or so years of the MCU to go off of?
Yeah.
For the most part of that, like, you know, just over a decade's worth of time. When you have that much content over that longer period of time, and 90% of it, or 95% in some cases of it, is at least good to great or like fantastic, you do earn that bit of brand trust where I think, okay, I'm not invested in the character of Loki, or, you know, going into the show not really expecting much, but just coming out of it on the other side and thinking, okay, you've pulled me in with this one just because they did something a little bit different here. Mm-hmm. And I think that was great as well. This isn't just sort of cliched like comic book sort of thing. Like the character work alone that they did in this episode with Loki, I thought was fantastic as well, of Owen Wilson's character just asking him certain questions that, yeah, I think are interesting to ask Loki, such as like, you know, why does he do what he does, and looking at his past and everything, and looking at how, okay, you haven't really been that successful with what you've done and what sort of happened, and Loki being sort of very dismissive of that, I thought was fantastic as well. So yeah, again, just brand trust, because sometimes things with the MCU now where I look at them, I think, okay, that might not be so great, but because you've earned my trust, I trust you to prove yourself with it. Mm-hmm. And it means I'll be stepping into more MCU stuff just because that trust is there. Do you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I know Bex has said repeatedly she was very excited for, I mean, obviously for Loki because it's got Tom Hiddleston in it, but she was just impressed by the fact that Wanda and Vision are two characters she didn't really care about at all, and they made her care about those characters with WandaVision. So if they can do that with two characters she doesn't care about, what's it going to be like watching a character where she really, really does care about them? And so I think that is part of the brand trust. You kind of know that they are excellent at what they do. Kevin Feige masterminded all this in such a wonderful way. I think it's quite interesting in how they've ended up running, which wasn't the intended order, but it's kind of interesting that they started off with a sort of kind of weird thing with WandaVision, and then you went back to sort of more traditional MCU with Falcon and Winter Soldier. Now we're back to something that's a bit more off the wall with Loki. Next thing to come up is What If, which is the animated series in the summer, and then I think it's supposed to be Miss Marvel and then Hawkeye. So you sort of, you know, you've got a couple of like weird shows with the sort of animated thing, and then you're back to probably something that's a bit more traditional MCU with Miss Marvel and Hawkeye. And then after that, mm-hmm. we're supposed to get She-Hulk, which is going to be back in the sort of more weirder end. And then at some point after that, you've got Secret Invasion, Ironheart and Armor Wars and the Wakanda series, which we don't know exactly what that's going to be called yet. But they've got a lot of interesting stuff lined up. But I like the fact that it's sort of oscillating between solid action, well-written story, something that is a bit more traditional, grounded MCU. And then you've got these weird shows kind of dropped in between as well. I think it's a really nice mm-hmm. mix they've put together for the TV shows.
I like at the moment how they've got this difference with, you know, when you've got something like WandaVision and then Loki, which is more timey-wimey, kind of multiverse-ish sort of stuff, which I really like, which they've only started really stepping into sort of since what, like Ant-Man became a thing roughly, and you had the whole, and then you still do have your traditional comic book stuff like a Falcon and Winter Soldier or like a Hawkeye and those sorts of properties and stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see how they sort of balance those, and because you don't want too much of either. So if you give a bit of one thing and then a bit of another thing, I think you'll balance it out pretty well. And, you know, again, brand trust. I trust the brand and Kevin Feige to do that, because why shouldn't I, you know?
Yeah. So I'm interested in What If, because it's going to be an animated series, and it's going to allow them to mess around with
whatever they want.
Basically do whatever they want and put characters that we know in different roles and things, because that's a sort of alt-universe kind of idea of What If, you know, Peggy was Captain America, or, you know, it's that sort of thing. So I think that's going to be just an interesting animated series. And then Miss Marvel, which comes after that, is going to be the first new character that we've got introduced via a TV series, in terms of new lead character anyway, that is coming mm-hmm. via a TV series. And then you're back to Hawkeye, which is traditional MCU. And then I'm really interested in She-Hulk, partly because of the fact that you've got Tatiana Maslany as the lead role, and she's fantastic. But also the fact that it's a comedy. You know, they're talking about it being closer to being a sort of half hour comedy than, you know, what we've seen before. So again, that's another slightly different thing we've got coming in. So I think the breadth of things that they're managing to do within the MCU and within the Marvel TV shows is really quite interesting, and they all advance the story on. And of course, you've got the films running alongside that as well now, which is starting to come back. You know, we've got Black Widow coming up, and then we've got Eternals and Multiverse of Madness and all that sort of thing. So yeah, they're doing a really, really solid job with all of this stuff. I don't think they've gone hugely wrong at any point recently. And I expect some of these, I'm sure at some point we're going to hit one which is going to be, yeah, that's not quite as good as maybe it should have been. But at the moment, sure. I mean, I think they're doing a great, great job. They're picking interesting stars. They're picking interesting writers and directors for it. Kevin Feige really seems to have a handle on it at the moment, which is just great.
It's funny looking back to 2019 when Endgame finished and they ended their big kind of Infinity Saga, and there was a bunch of people saying like, oh, you know, that's kind of it for the MCU. And I was like, no, not really.
No.
they're just going to like stop. It's just into a new phase now. And this is the transition phase into the next one of those big sagas by, like you said, bringing in all these new big characters and kind of re-sorting out the Avengers and everything.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a cool time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Now I am very much looking forward to seeing where they go with it. And I mean, Eternals again was another one where I think they brought out the trailer and there were characters that people didn't really know. And I'm going to be interested to see how that lands. But, you know, I have a certain amount of faith because it's Marvel and they've done so well so far with the MCU. I have faith that that is going to be a solid film. But, you know, we'll wait and see when it comes out at the end of the year.
Yep.
In terms of other things, I'm still working my way through Sweet Tooth. I really, really like that show. It's such a lovely little adventure series. It's a good family orientated. There's nothing overly violent. It's kind of, I think, aimed at that kind of Doctor Who-y sort of audience of something that very much is a family thing. You know, young children can watch it and will love the characters, but there is enough in there for older people to watch through as well. This is the thing about the world has been ravaged by this illness and it has killed large swathes of the population. But one of the things that have come out and happened at the same time is there are a bunch of children that have been born who are human animal hybrids. And the lead character that you're following is a kid called Gus, who is nicknamed Sweet Tooth because he likes sweet things. And he is a hybrid, and he's been living in the woods with his father, who took him away to seclude him because the hybrids are being hunted. And something happens to his father and he ends up having to leave his seclusion and hooks up with some other people to go on this journey to try and find his mother, who they believe is in Colorado. And it's sort of about trying to get to Colorado at this point. But there's various different plot lines going on with various characters. So as well as following Gus, you're following this virologist who is trying to find a cure. There is another woman who has a sort of sanctuary for the hybrid kids, and you're following a bit of her story as well. And it's one of these things where you've got like three or four different plot lines which are all starting to converge together, presumably at the end of the first season. That's where they're going to end up. I've got a couple of episodes left of that, but it's a Netflix series and I'm really, really enjoying it. I would urge you to go and watch it if you like those sort of interesting fantasy family dramas. Definitely one I would go and watch.
I keep meaning to watch certain things on Netflix. There is like probably four or five, maybe even more shows on Netflix, but I just keep watching things on Apple and Disney, and I still want to check out Nevers on Now TV, or Now as it's called.
Yes.
Whatever, on Sky basically. But you know, I've only got one pair of eyes, so.
Yes, I know the feeling. Prodigal Son came back for his second season as well. So the first episode as that has gone out sort of picks up exactly where the last season ended pretty much. Again, it's been kind of solid. As we know, it's now cancelled, unfortunately. It doesn't look like it's going to find another home, which is a real shame. It's one of those things that I think would work quite well on a streaming service, but given that it is a show made by WB and even HBO Max didn't pick it up, I think it's probably done, unfortunately. I'm going to try and enjoy the second season and you know, keep watching that. The other big thing, of course, that happened this week was E3, which is out at the moment. I've not been following E3 particularly closely. I presume you'll be covering this on the gaming podcast in more detail. A couple of things I did spot. I know they've got Diablo 2 coming out, which is a remastered version of the Diablo game. They announced Avatar Frontiers of Pandora. So there's an Avatar game coming.
That's a very strange time to show an Avatar game.
Yeah.
Like, because we haven't had a film for 12 years. Was it 2009?
We know there's
the four sequels coming, but we haven't seen any trailers for those. I just possibly would have saved it to line up with that a bit more, because it looks all right. It looks good, but no one's really talked about Avatar in the last 5 years or something.
Yeah.
So it's fine that they announced it. I just think, you know, is Avatar really on anybody's sort of mind at the moment? Because I don't know. So anyway,
that was generally the comments that I saw on Twitter as well after it was like, really now? But so they've announced it anyway, so there's that. There's a Guardians of the Galaxy game coming. They showed some footage from that. I saw there's a Jurassic World Evolution 2 game coming, which, reading through the notes on it, Jurassic World Evolution's from Frontier, who are the people that make the Planet Coaster games and the Planet Zoo game. It does sound from the description that it may be a little bit closer to Planet Zoo, in terms of one of the issues with Jurassic World Evolution was you got given prefabricated shops, so it was fairly limited in terms of how you could make each of the parks look, whereas it does sound that there is going to be more construction options and things, which massively expands what you can actually do and how you can make the parks look and all that sort of thing. It's not abundantly clear if that will be the case, but it does seem to be saying you will have more options in terms of what you can build and things. They're also not restricting it to certain islands as much as well, and there's going to be different biomes and stuff. So I think that sounds like it could be really interesting, and they are talking about that coming out later this year, so they've obviously been working on it for a while. I'm very interested in that, because that's totally my sort of game. The other thing which I saw a trailer for, which I urge you to go watch if you haven't seen it, is a trailer for The Outer Worlds 2. The Outer Worlds is a RPG made by Obsidian. The first game's very, very funny. It's maybe a little shorter, not quite as expansive as I would have liked, but it's definitely up there. It's a kind of Fallout world, but sort of space adventure kind of thing. It's got very much got that humour that you got from some of the Fallout games in it. This sort of steampunky vibe going on. But it's wonderfully fun, that first game. It's well worth playing through. The trailer for the second game is kind of a parody of those game trailers where they haven't actually got any footage to show. All they've got is a CGI cinematic. But the voiceover throughout the entire trailer acknowledges the fact that it's purely CGI, and they're like, and now we're going to show you a shot of our hero, but only from a distance and behind, because they haven't finished the finalized model yet, you know. They're kind of making remarks about it like this. It's very, very, very funny. I love the humor in those games, and I'm really excited that they're doing a second one of that, because I did really enjoy the world that they created for the first one. So if Obsidian can build on that world, I think that's going to be really, really interesting. Anything particular that's leapt out for you from E3?
There was the Mario Rabbids sequel, which looked interesting. Didn't quite know what to expect from Ubisoft. I think Ubisoft and Square Enix were kind of poor and lacking a little bit. Microsoft stood out a little bit more. Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, looks all right. But to me, again, kind of bringing it back to brand trust, Square did the Avengers game. So it's sort of like, okay, why would I necessarily trust you to do a Guardians game? I know it's a different developer. This one is Eidos, I think their name is called, and Crystal did the Avengers game, so it is a different developer, but it's the same publisher, so we'll see what happens with that. But it looks a better direction, because it's no multiplayer, no microtransactions, it's just a single player story, which I think the Avengers game should have tried to do. The Outer Worlds, I need to finish the first one, so I've not really got anything to say about the second, but it's good that it's getting a sequel. Kind of doesn't incentivize me more to go back and play the first one. We also saw a little bit of Starfield from the Microsoft conference. I was a bit confused about the reception around that, because the trailer came out and everyone seemed to lose their minds. But when was that game announced? 6 years ago? Years ago or so? And we haven't seen really any of it in that time. So it's like, okay, it might be a very good game, but there's no reason at the moment to be excited for it. So I was just a bit confused about the reception behind that, because we didn't see any gameplay. We sort of saw a very limited trailer for it. So we haven't really seen much of it at the moment. I think Halo Infinite looks looked a little bit better than what it did before. They showed off a bit more of that, so that looked all right. So yeah, those were some of the things that sort of stuck out to me.
Good. But yeah, I'm sure if you want to know more about the gaming stuff, Matt will be covering it over on the Entertainment Talk Gaming Show as well. So go and check that out over there. There is one other thing that I saw this week. I interviewed Catherine McNamara, who you'll know as Mia from Arrow, and was in Shadowhunters as well. She's got a new film out called Untitled Horror Movie. It's a comedy parody horror movie. It's a comedy about making a horror movie from Nick Simon, who was the director behind Truth or Dare. It follows six co-stars who learn that their hit TV show is about to be cancelled, so they decide to shoot their own movie. Stuck for a plot, they unintentionally summon a demonic spirit with an affinity for violence that starts picking them off one vapid actor at a time. The entire thing was shot during the pandemic. They don't actually mention the pandemic throughout the film, but it is clearly shot in the pandemic, because a lot of the interaction between the six leads is done via video chat. I mean, it's pretty much all done by a sort of what looks like Zoom calls, and them also filming themselves doing scenes for this horror movie as well. Because it was shot in the pandemic, it's all the actors in their own homes doing their own lighting, their own makeup, and their all their own stunts. Everything was done, you know, separately, sort of socially distanced in their own places. Nick, who directed it, describes it as part ghost movie, part self-aware comedy, part deranged Gen Z satire, which I think sums it up quite well. As long with Catherine McNamara, it's got Luke Baines in it from Shadowhunters, Claire Holt from Vampire Diaries, Emmy Raver Lampman from Umbrella Academy, Darren Barnett from Never Have I Ever, and Tim Granaderos from 13 Reasons Why are the main six cast, who bounce off each other really, really well. It's very, very funny. You can tell it was shot on a fairly limited budget, but I think they do a great job with it. It's more of the sort of, looks a bit like a sort of found footage film, that sort of thing. It's got more of that kind of vibe for it, but it is a comedy. It's not a full-blown horror. There are some kind of funny horror moments in it, but it's not a full-blown horror. It is definitely a comedy. If you want to find out more about the film, you go to untitledhorror.com. The interview you can find in your stream, it will be the Behind the Scenes podcast just before this one goes out as well. So you can go find that in your stream, but that's the interview with Catherine McNamara. So go and check that out. That was really fun talking to her about that. So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
We start off the TV and film news with some really tragic cancellation news. Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist has been cancelled at NBC after two seasons, although there is a glimmer of hope because the producers of the show, which is Lionsgate, said they're not willing to give up on it yet. In a world where finding loyal and passionate audiences is never easy, we believe there must be a home for this great award-winning show with a passionate and dedicated following, said Lionsgate in a statement. So they are desperately trying to shop it around to other people. They believe that they can find somebody to buy it and pick it up. Lionsgate are the people behind Love Life on HBO Max, Mythic Quest on Apple, Heels and American Gods on Stars, Dear White People on Netflix. Zoe's already streams on Hulu as well. So there are a number of people that they have deals with right now for other shows, and a deal for Zoe's on Hulu. So there may be some leeway in trying to get somebody else to pick that up. By no means guaranteed, and it's always very difficult to sell these things on, but it has a bit of a Lucifer feel to it, that there may be a strong enough passion for the show and love for the show that it may just manage to find a new home. Obviously, it's what we both want, but yeah, it's such a shame that it opted not to move this across to Peacock. The numbers weren't great on NBC, although it should be pointed out the network moved moved the series time slot four times over two seasons and put it on hiatus in the middle of the second season. So
yeah, that's a stupid set of things to do.
Yeah, so you can't entirely blame the show for the fact that if people were struggling to find it, it is a shame that they decided not to move it to Peacock, because I think it would have worked well as a streaming thing. And I think it's a show which I could see fitting on Apple. I could see it fitting on Hulu. I feel that it would work well as a CW show, actually, as well, if they managed to do some sort of deal with HBO Max and CW as a sort of cross deal.
I'd rather it be on Apple or Hulu, but if it ends up on CW, then that's cool as well. Mm-hmm. So obviously NBC didn't quite want it anymore. The other thing, because I think I mentioned to you when it was during season two, or they changed it from like a Tuesday to a Sunday or something, and then clearly changed its time slot or something like that. So there might have been occasions where somebody thought it was on a Sunday or a Tuesday and it was on the other day, or I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty silly thing to do. I mean, with something like Walking Dead or something, it's always kind of been, you know, Sunday at 9, or you know, a lot of these things have established time slots. Like The Flash has been on, was it 6 or 7 years now?
Yeah.
And that's been always like Tuesday at 8. So you kind of always knew. It's sad that NBC didn't want to go forward, but you know, this doesn't feel like a sort of cancelled, dead, that's it. It sort of feels very much that Lionsgate does want to continue with it. So it does seem to have a number of options, the ones obviously you just read out and stuff. I don't mind which one gets it, as long as it's, you know, back on the air, and as long as it's good as it always was, which I trust the creators and the cast to be able to keep doing that. So we'll see what happens with it, but it does very much seem like there's an attempt to put it just somewhere else, which I think is a positive sign. I find it very interesting they've started doing this, like moving a few shows over to Peacock, as if they see more of a success on streaming, which in the world of television as a whole, in my eyes over the last 5 years, more shows that have been more successful, I'm pretty sure have been on streaming services. So maybe they're looking at it in that way. There does seem to be some sort of shift going on a little bit there.
Well, speaking of that, there is a story that came out about Clarice, which of course is the Hannibal Lecter show without Hannibal Lecter that we'd be making fun of. That not actually aired over here yet, but there was this bonkers story that came out about Clarice, because the original announcement, or the original sort of rumour, was that Clarice was going to move from CBS, where it had been airing and not doing particularly well, onto Paramount Plus, because they're both owned by Viacom CBS, and there were talks with MGM, who co-produced the show, about moving it across to Paramount Plus, because although it wasn't doing well on the linear broadcast on CBS, it was doing fairly positive numbers on streaming. And they see that as a sort of, you know, Viacom, CBS see that as very much things where they can pass things backwards and forwards, like Evil and SEAL Team have both moved over onto Paramount Plus for their new seasons. So both of those have moved across. They are seeing that if something works better on streaming, they are moving it off the main channel and onto Paramount Plus. You know, they're working in partnership as much as they can with that. Now, what's happened with Clarice is, depending which side you talk to, there are a couple of different stories. Negotiations basically stalled. Viacom CBS say MGM abruptly stopped good faith negotiations that were closing on an agreement. MGM say they opted to walk away after being offered a mediocre deal that they couldn't accept. So depending which side you talk to, they've both got differing points of view about what the situation was. And bearing in mind Deadline, who spoke to somebody at CBS, so the news is, this information is coming from the CBS side, but Viacom CBS, Paramount and CBS Studios, who actually make the series, says that they made most, if not all, of the concessions that MGM asked for in the business terms, but MGM still would not make a deal. So a lot of the industry veterans are saying it seems to be one of the craziest situations they've seen, because there appears to be a deal for a second season on the table. And as far as CBS or Viacom CBS were concerned, it was a very fair deal. You know, there was some changes to the money, but it wasn't unfavorable in any way to MGM as far as they were concerned. It was actually pretty favorable terms. And you've got a show which is based on a really top IP in Silence of the Lambs. You've got a showrunner in Alex Kurtzman, who is the man that is behind the Star Trek franchise for CBS. So, you know, it's a top producer that is behind it.
Yeah.
And MGM are potentially walking away from this deal that is going to basically put 300 people out of a job. So it's such an odd situation. Of course, there is a slight change in that MGM are likely to be merging with Amazon in the not too distant future. I mean, that deal has been agreed between the two companies. It's got to go through the anti-competitive stuff stuff at government level, but it sure seems like that's going to go through. It does make me wonder if that deal has had something to do with the fact that MGM have put the brakes on this, that maybe the merger has something to do with it and MGM have other plans for the Silence of the Lambs franchise and they don't want some random little show stuck on Paramount Plus that is going to contradict whatever else they want to do with it. I do wonder if maybe that's the excuse. You know, they're using the excuse of, oh, the deal wasn't good enough, and using that to walk away so they don't have to deal with it. I do wonder if maybe that's the reason why. But it's a really, really odd one, because, I mean, it sounds like from the reports that we're getting that Paramount and CBS have basically given them everything they asked for and MGM still won't take the deal. So it's very, very weird.
Do you think MGM wants to, like, put it on Amazon Prime or something? Is there an element of that, maybe?
They wouldn't, I don't think, be able to take the show and put it on Amazon Prime because it is a co-production with CBS. I think it's more likely that they want to do other things with the Silence of the Lambs franchise and they don't want this show out there. Sort of in the same way that Marvel killed off the Netflix deal, in that they didn't want those shows milling around outside the main MCU. Not sure. They thought they were bad, but they just didn't want to have to deal with that as a separate entity. And I do wonder if it's a similar position where they have plans for Silence of the Lambs moving forward and they don't want to have this show just sat there potentially outside of everything else that's going on. I don't know. That would be my theory as to what has happened, because it seems very odd that if these reports are correct and CBS offers MGM everything they asked for and they still said no, that's a very weird thing to do. You know, at the moment it isn't technically cancelled, but it sounds like it's not going to be going anywhere if things carry on the way they are. But as I say, it doesn't air over here, but it was just such a bizarre thing to happen that I just wanted to bring that one up. There is one other cancelled show this week as well. The Heart Guy, otherwise known as Dr. Doctor, has been cancelled after 5 seasons. That aired on the Drama Channel over here. It was an Australian show, but that's not coming back after 5 seasons. I think we've still got the 5th season to go out over here, actually, but that will be the last one. Moving on to happier things and renewals, Coroner's been renewed for a 4th season, so Coroner will be back. That runs on Sky Witness over here. Hacks, the HBO Max series, has been renewed for a 2nd season. That's not been picked up over here yet, but now it's got a 2nd season. That may inspire somebody to pick it up.
That HBO Max thing's really irritating. Nobody's made a deal with them, and whenever we hear about a HBO Max show, apart from, you know, Flight Attendant and what was that Ridley Scott show? What was that called?
I know the one you mean. Yes.
The sci-fi one. Yeah. Apart from those two and maybe some other ones here and there, we never have any ideas to when we're going to get those things.
That's the thing. I mean, some things get picked up, some things don't. There isn't a cohesive deal for those shows anywhere at the moment. Starstruck, which has also been renewed for a 2nd season, which was the Rose Matafeo comedy about the woman that ends up sleeping with a film star unexpectedly. That's been renewed for a 2nd season. And that's a BBC show over here, a HBO Max show in the US. So you've got some things which are like that, which are kind of co-production deals. But then you've got other things which are straight HBO Max shows, and Sky have picked up a couple of them. But then you've got something like Harley Quinn, which has ended up on E4. And so they end up all over the place. I do wish that Sky had just signed a deal for the HBO Max things as well as the main HBO. That would have made life so much easier. But yeah, at this point, you could have actually done a deal with Sky to launch a sort of Sky HBO Max here and run it alongside as an extra service, maybe, but I don't know.
I mean, it's HBO Max, it's pretty big. It's not like MTV or something.
Yeah. So Hacks renewed for a 2nd season, Starstruck renewed for a 2nd season. Kevin Hart's action comedy series Die Hard has been renewed for a 2nd season as well. This is the first Roku original to be renewed. So this was one of the shows which was a Quibi series. Then, of course, Roku bought all the Quibi shows for the Roku channel, and now Roku have renewed it. So that's the first one to be renewed, which, I mean, means that if they are going to start renewing some of these, you never know, we might get another Fugitive series out of them, possibly, because they're not like full length things, you know. They are, I still think, the Quibi formats. I don't know whether they've reformatted them for Roku. I haven't actually been on and looked. because you can get the Roku channel. It's free. It's an app. It's on all the Roku boxes, but you can get it on Sky and Now TV as well. And it's free to go on and use. So you can go and find these shows on there for nothing if you've got either Now or Sky or a Roku platform of some description. So that has been renewed for a second season. You can pick that up. And C has got a third season renewal. They dropped a trailer for the second season as well. It now comes with added Dave Bautista in the second cool. season. So that looks really good. The trailer looks great for the second season. It's coming on 27th of August. They've announced that for season two. So you've got until the 27th of August to get through season one of that, Matt.
Yeah, that is going to be my next Apple show now that I've finished Mosquito Coast and Dickinson. So I'm planning on, I might watch the first episode today. We'll see. Be a good goal for me to try and catch up by then. Quite like Dave Bautista. I mean, I saw him recently in Army of the Dead, the Netflix Zack Snyder thing, shooting zombies like normally and all that sort of fun stuff. And then he did these sort of like what I'm sure were wrestling moves on zombies. So that was kind of cool. I mean, Dave Bautista's cool anyway, because we've seen him in like Guardians of the Galaxy and other things. So yeah, him on screen with Jason might be pretty cool.
Yeah. So people making jokes about the fact that it's appropriate is in C because of course you can't see him taking the thing from Guardians of the Galaxy. But he shows up in the second season and I'm very much looking forward to seeing him in that. I really enjoyed the first season. Bear in mind, the first episode is very much a setup for the rest of the series. So there is a huge time jump at the end of the first episode. So there is a little bit of difference between that episode and everything else. It is a little bit slow in places, but I think it's a solid, compelling story throughout. So if you're finding yourself getting a little bit bored in places, work through it. It is a good, solid story, but it does take a little time sometimes to get going. It's a great series, though. It is well, well worth watching. And as I say, second season of that coming 27th of August. In terms of pickups, Harley Quinn season two finally has landed on E4. Clearly the dart landed in the right spot. Monday, 21st of June at 10:30, that is coming to E4. Rick and Morty, the fifth season of that, whatever it is, that's going to be airing slightly before
it.
Fifth season, I think that is. So that 10 p.m. for Rick and Morty and then 10:30 for Harley Quinn. I think there is a Bird Girl, I think he's following that at 11 as well, which is an Adult Swim thing, spin-off from Birdman, I think is the Adult Swim cartoon. So there's that coming after it as well. So there's a sort of animation segment from 10 p.m. on Monday, the 21st of June. Over on All Four, they've picked up Party of Five, which was the reboot of the old 90s series that ran for one season. So there is only one season of it, but they've picked that up from 25th of June. That's going to be landing on All Four. So if you're a fan of the original, you might be interested in watching that. Outer Banks season two has a premiere date as well. Now that's coming back on the 30th of July onto Netflix. I really enjoyed the first season of that. It's a really fun kind of teen drama about a group of kids that are sort of treasure hunting. They're going after this lost gold, but it's really, really fun. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. So maybe more than I maybe should have done for the type of show it was, but that's Outer Banks season two, 30th of July for that. The Flash season 7 has got an air date along with Legends and Supergirl, so they're all back. Flash season 7 returns on 29th of June. Legends of Tomorrow season 6 follows on Wednesday the 30th of June, and Supergirl's 6th and final season is on the 1st of July. So that's the Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday that they are landing, all at 8 p.m. all on Sky One. You may have seen an advert on TV that has the Flash and then Supergirl and then Legends. I've double checked this with Sky. The advert is wrong. Apparently, this is they put the wrong around on the TV ad. Somebody is going to have a very bad Monday morning, I think, at Sky. But the ad apparently went out with the wrong way around. I got them to double check it, and apparently, it is Flash Legends Supergirl, not Flash Supergirl Legends, that the order is in. Not that it hugely matters, but yes, that is going to be the order. Mm-hmm. Monsters at Work also has a slightly changed air date. They've moved it back a few days. That's now going out on Wednesday the 7th of July. That is going to land. It was going to go out on Friday, but they've started to move some of their shows to Wednesday. So that's Wednesday the 7th of July. That is landing, and there is a trailer up on the website for that.
I'm planning on doing a podcast for that. Should be fun show. I'm struggling to come up with a name for it, which is the only problem I've got, but I'm sure I'll figure it out eventually.
Yeah, keep an eye out for that over on Entertainment Talk, but that looks like it's going to be a fun series. I'm looking forward to that. There's a few updates for Star Trek and Star Wars. Star Trek, they've apparently started recording the voices for season 3 of Lower Decks, so that is in production now. Strange New Worlds, they're up to episode 8 of 10 in terms of the recording. That's expected to debut on Paramount in 2022. Picard season 2 has begun filming in Los Angeles, so that's also expected to arrive in 2022 as well. And Discovery season 4 is well into shooting. They've actually got some of the episodes picture locked already. That means the episodes are edited and in their final form, but haven't got the VFX and the music and all the post-production stuff on yet. They've got still that to do, but that is due to land later in 2021. It's going to be towards the end of the year. One of the things that has sped up the production is they're using a volume this year, which is the same thing that they use on The Mandalorian. It's that big virtual studio set thing that they use on The Mandalorian. They've now got one of those, or access to one of those. If you want to know a bit more about the VFX work on Discovery, if you go back to Behind the Scenes podcast 45, I spoke to one of the guys from Pixamundo, who were one of the main VFX guys behind it, and he talks a little bit about using the volume in season 4. Obviously not details about season 4, but he talks about how that's changed the production process and that sort of stuff, as well as talking about all the other VFX work on the show as well. So that's Behind the Scenes podcast 45 if you're a fan of Discovery and want to go and listen to that. Over on Star Wars, a little bit of information about the Book of Boba Fett. They're actually describing it as being slightly more like The Mandalorian Season 2.5, and you should expect some of the characters from the flagship series to appear in the spin-off. They haven't said who, but you know, some of the characters are likely to cross over. It was originally thought it was only going to be 4 episodes, but apparently the IMDb listing has at least 7 episodes listed. So it may be 7, or it may be more episodes than that. We don't actually know at the moment. The only thing we really know about it is Temuera Morrison and Ming-Na Wen are both returning in that as Boba Fett and Fennec Shand for that series. So that is likely to land sooner. I think they said end of this year is when they're talking about that.
Yeah, landing. December or yeah. So, I think. I would have assumed, yeah, like 6 to 8 episodes or something around that.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens with that. But like I say, they are talking about it being a bit more The Mandalorian 2.5 than being something completely separate. With The Mandalorian Season 2, one bit of news that did come out is they let slip that it hasn't even begun filming yet, because Obi-Wan at the moment is using the volume, which is their main soundstage. So they're actually saying that Season 3 might not land until late 2022. So it sounds like it's going to be Boba Fett, Obi-Wan, then The Mandalorian Season 2 for the Star Wars series.
Mm-hmm. That's fun to do, you know, if you want to rotate them and stuff and have... They don't all need to come out at once.
Yeah.
So if you can, yeah, you've got the whole Star Wars galaxy to do what you want with. So if you've got like 3 different sets, Obi-Wan, Mandalorian and Boba Fett, just take your time with them and then just rotate them. So mm-hmm. what they can kind of do with Disney Plus a little bit, especially with something like Marvel and Star Wars, I think the Disney and the Pixar stuff's going to be a little bit different maybe. But you had Mandalorian Season 2, then you had a couple of Marvel shows, and then you're going to go back to, you know, some Star Wars stuff later. So you can kind of actually rotate the two brands as well. If it means that we get 2 Marvel shows and then maybe like a Marvel film and then like go back to Star Wars or something to kind of rotate things a little bit, I think could work for them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, 3 Star Wars TV shows in the next sort of year or so, because it's sort of going to be December, then Obi-Wan probably the middle of the year, next year, and then Mandalorian towards the end of next year. Then they've got a string of other things lined up as well. So that I'm very much looking forward to them laying all that out. Over on Netflix, they had a thing last week called Geeked Week, which was them doing a string of announcements basically about a bunch of their different sort of more geeky kind of led shows. So we've just picked out a few of the announcements from that. Shadow and Bone, I think as we mentioned last week, has been renewed for a second season, which I'm very happy about. I'm glad that's coming back. They've announced Splinter Cell, a TV show based on the Tom Clancy series of video games. It's going to be helmed by the John Wick writer Derek Colsand. Splinter Cell is one of the things that I think could work pretty well as a TV series. You know, video games are fun. I haven't played them in a very long time, but yeah, I mean, you know, I think that could be something that works quite well.
Yeah. Well, Ubisoft hasn't made a Splinter Cell game in 8 years, so
there you go.
You know, people are kind of really wanting Splinter Cell content, and they didn't announce anything for a new game at this E3 because he's been in like other mobile games and stuff, but we really want like a AAA, either a new game or a remaster of some of the old games. I mean, I've heard some good things about Chaos Theory, but that's an Xbox original game, so that would be like great for a remaster. So yeah, a TV show is another good avenue that isn't a mobile game that people don't want, they could do. So at least they remember they've still got Splinter Cell. So it's good that they're doing something good with it. But yeah, John Wick writer in there sounds like a good match. So
yeah, sounds like the right person to be doing it anyway. There is an anime adaptation of the Far Cry series coming up, which I think sounds interesting. I've played a few of the Far Cry games, not all of them, so don't know which one it's based off, but there you go. The Umbrella Academy creator and showrunner Steve Blackman unveiled the 10 titles for the episodes for the upcoming third season. So they are called Meet the Family, World's Biggest Ball of Twine, Pocket Full of Lightning, Kugel Blitz, Kindest Cut, Marigold, Alvida Zane, Wedding at the End of the World, Six Bells, and Oblivion, just ominously to end on. Those are the titles for them. I mean, who knows what they're going to be kind of based around. I mean, Meet the Family, I think, is fairly obviously going to be picking up where we ended the last season. But as for the rest of them, I mean, it could really be anything. I mean, I'm so looking forward to that show coming back. I really, really enjoyed that season, the last couple of seasons of that. So I think they've done a stunning job with that book.
Yeah. Do we know how far along they are with that?
They are filming.
Still filming or something?
They are. I don't know how far along they are, but we know they certainly have been filming. I think they started back in February, I seem to remember. So they've been filming for a while. So they may be done by now, but you know, things take a bit longer at the moment, so I'm not sure.
Now that I think about it, in the Elliot Page Oprah interview, I think Oprah asked Elliot about it. I think he said they started in January or February, something like that. I might be misremembering, but he did mention it in there, which is cool.
That was my recollection as well. It was sort of January, February they started filming again. So it'd be great to see them back. Cowboy Bebop, the live action series, they have announced that Yoko Kanno, who is the original composer from the animated series, is going to be back for the live action one as well. So he's making new original music for it, which is great news. A couple of air dates, Lock and Key, they've announced coming in October for the second season. And Another Life, which was the Katie Sackhoff sci-fi series, which is quite fun, that's coming in autumn 2021 as well. So October 2021.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that kind of completely flew under the radar, really. But I enjoyed the first season of that. I thought it was a fun sci-fi show.
You would kind of think if you say sci-fi and then Katie Sackhoff, you'd think that would have hit a little bit more. I mean, it got renewed, so it must have done something pretty good, especially at Netflix like these days that shows can get cancelled and stuff. So I just thought it would have picked up a little bit more steam, so to speak.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I totally agree. You would have thought it would be a bit more headline, but I don't know. Apparently, maybe it's fairly cheap for them to make. I guess it's one of those shows that's shot in Vancouver. It feels more in the realms of the sort of smaller sci-fi type channel shows. And maybe it's just been relatively cheap to do. He didn't need as big a numbers, or maybe it got huge numbers and just for some reason people aren't talking about it as much. I don't know. But whatever reason, it is back for a second season. So that's coming in autumn 2021. That's Another Life. Stranger Things announced 4 new cast members. Amy Beth McNulty from Annie with an E is playing Vicky, a cool, fast-talking band nerd who catches the eye of one of our beloved heroes. Miles Truitt from Queen Sugar is playing Patrick, a Hawkins baseball star who has friends, talent, and a good life until a shocking event sends him spiraling out of control. Regina Ting Shen from Queen of the South and Falcon and Winter Soldier joins as Miss Kelly, a popular guidance counselor who cares deeply for her students, especially those struggling the most. And Grace Van Dyne, who was in The Village and Charlie Says, is playing Chrissy, Hawkins' high school cheerleader and the most popular girl in school, but beneath the seemingly perfect surface lies a dark secret. So those are the four new characters they announced for Stranger Things, which I'm guessing will probably land either later this year or next year, but don't know.
Somewhere around that, I guess. Yeah. So Halloween would be a good debut for that, maybe, if they could get it done by then.
Yeah, that would be good if they could do it by then. So we'll see. But yeah, those are the four additional cast members that are coming in. And we know there's a number of new faces. If you go and check the website on the article on do a search for Stranger Things, you'll see all the new people that are coming to Stranger Things. And lastly, CD Projekt Red and Netflix announced WitcherCon, a virtual fan event, and that is coming on Friday, July the 9th, 2021. It's going to be an online virtual fan event. It's going to be covering the game as well as the TV show. So I'm sure there'll be lots of stuff coming out from that as well. I wonder if they'll announce a new game there. That would be nice.
I did hear, I think we talked about it on the gaming podcast a couple of months ago. They said that because they did this, like, I think it was an investor call or something.
Yeah.
I think they mentioned something about another Witcher game. I don't know if it'd be Witcher 4 with Geralt, because they really, really did properly wrap up that story. And I don't really want to see like another part to it. But you could still do like games within that universe as well. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm guessing from this, we'll probably get a season 2 trailer for The Witcher, because I'd imagine that would land later this year. It'll be 2 years by that point.
Yeah.
In December.
They did post a tiny little clip in Geek Week. There were clips of various things. I mean, if you go and check through all the kind of roundup footage, there were various clips of a few different shows, and there was some behind the scenes stuff of Sandman. No actual footage, but there was some look at the sets and some of the props and some of the characters and that sort of thing. So there is that up on there as well. There was a lot of behind the scenes stuff, and they did release, it was only like a 10-15 second kind of quick cut thing of some shots from The Witcher as well. So I suspect that we will probably get a full trailer at WitcherCon for the season 2 of the TV show, and probably, I would think, date announcement. But yeah, it'd be good if it's that and we get a new game announcement. That would be wonderful. Moving back over onto Disney Plus, Jamelia Jamil has joined Marvel She-Hulk series. Of course, you'll know her from The Good Place. She starred in that. She's playing the villain Titiana, according to reports, in that, who not really a Marvel villain, I know. I think it was a Spider-Woman villain, actually, but it was created in 1984 by Jim Shooter and Mike Zeck. She's an expert fighter. She has superhuman strength and healing. Jamil played Tahani in The Good Place. She's also been voicing the character Roxy in Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous as well. So, you know, that's what she's been doing recently. But I like the look of this series. I mean, the She-Hulk series, described as a legal comedy, centers on Jennifer Walters, played by Tatiana Maslany. We don't know much more about the actual plot of the TV series, but I mean, the premise in the comic books was the fact that Walters gets shot by a crime boss. She's losing blood and has a rare blood type. The only person that is a match for her, that is close enough, is her cousin, who happens to be Bruce Banner. And when she had the blood transfusion, obviously the Hulk DNA transfuses across to her as well, and she ends up becoming She-Hulk. Although she's more like the intelligent version of Hulk that we see in Endgame than the sort of rage monster that we see in the earlier Hulk versions. So she's sort of She-Hulk, but she's also kind of this lawyer as well. I think that sounds like it's going to be a really fun series. It sounds like it's going to be something very different. Tatiana Maslany, Jamelia in there, Mark Ruffalo back as Banner, even though I don't know whether that's going to be a full role or whether that's just going to be a guest spot. Tim Roth is coming back as Abomination as well, apparently, for this. Ginger Gonzaga from Space Force and I'm Dying Up Here is playing Walter's best friend. And Renee Elsie Goldberry, who was in Altered Carbon, is playing a character called Amelia, but I don't know any more or better than that. So that's the only cast that's been announced so far. I think that sounds like it's going to be good fun anyway.
Yeah, brilliant. Getting to see her on screen with Tatiana is going to be really cool. Obviously, you've got the other cast like Mark and Tim Roth. Yeah, all them being in there sounds quite good. If this is sort of a, she gains the powers and then Bruce teaches her how to control her, or sort of is a bit of a like guide for her, I think that might work pretty well. Because they're not expecting her to get her powers and just be able to control it straight away. That would be a little bit unrealistic. In the same way that, you know, when we first saw Bruce in the Marvel films when he started to get the Hulk powers and stuff. You don't just control something like that straight away. So if, you know, Hulk brings his kind of experience, or Bruce brings his experience and kind of teaches her how to maybe control it, and that uses a few episodes or something, I think that would be quite good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, seeing Jamila back in something, obviously she's doing the voice acting in the Jurassic series, which is cool, but all looking good so far. And again, brand trust. I mean, I was already in for that anyway. I don't think there's nothing similar to this, such as with Loki. With Loki, I was sort of, okay, he's all right. But with the She-Hulk stuff, I've kind of been invested pretty much from day one. So should be pretty good.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that. I think it looks really interesting. Sticking with streaming services, but moving over onto NBC's streaming service, Peacock, they have handed a straight to series order to Ted, based on the Seth MacFarlane movies. So the Ted films, if you've seen them, follows John Bennett, who is an 8-year-old boy, wished his teddy bear would come to life and become his best friend, which it did. The movie follows a 35-year-old John, played by Mark Wahlberg, who is still best friends with Ted, voiced by Seth MacFarlane. However, in adulthood, his cuddly and somewhat potty-mouthed sidekick starts to stop John and his girlfriend, Laurie, played by Mila Kunis, from moving on with their lives. So that was the setup for the movie. They haven't said exactly what direction the TV series will take. MacFarlane is in negotiations to reprise his role as the voice of the foul-mouthed teddy bear. Wahlberg and Kunis aren't expected to reprise their roles, so it's likely going to have new human characters in it. Whether that would either mean some form of recasting, or whether Ted's gone to live with somebody else, or he's on his own, don't know. I don't know whether I ever saw Ted 2. I quite enjoyed the first Ted movie. It was a fun idea. Yeah. Apparently, the original films are the highest grossing R-rated comedies of all time, which are not based on a sequel or other IP. Grossed more than $750 million worldwide. So, yeah, I mean, you can sort of see why maybe they want to do something like this. But I don't know whether I think it's an interesting one.
I did quite like both films. You know, they're just very, very adult comedies with a talking teddy bear. And it was just, you know, you didn't need to think about it too much or worry about why the Ted is talking or anything like that. You just sort of had the adult fun in there and everything. I don't think this will work quite, and I could be wrong about what I'm about to say, you know, of course I could. I don't think it will work so well if you've not got Mark and Mila in there. They've got that whole friendship thing between Mark and Ted and everything. So I hope they bring both those back. This is the one place where I don't, because I often do say, hey, you should just like recast a character if you can't get the actor back. I can't see the chemistry working quite so well with somebody else. So, although again, I could be wrong about that. If you kind of had it as like a Ted focus thing, or he met like different characters or something, I don't think that would work quite so well. So I do think you need the three of them back. Obviously Seth doing the voice as well. Just to get that, because there's a good kind of amount of chemistry between them three as well. So I think you need all three of them back to make it work. I could be wrong about that, but it sounds like it could be just a good fun continuation. So we'll see.
Yeah, it depends what direction they decide to go with it in. I mean,
yeah, what the story is and that.
Yeah, what the story is, how they're going to set it up, if they're not going to use Wahlberg and Kunis in there, how they explain why Ted isn't with his best friend, and or I mean, I'm not sure where the movies end, but I see where they go with it. That has been given a straight to series order, so that will be coming to Peacock in the US. With it being Peacock, that means it's NBC, so it may end up on Sky over here, it may not, we don't know. There are other companies involved in making that as well, so we'll have to wait and see. So that's all the news we've got from this week. Let's move on to some highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week, Working Moms returns on Tuesday the 15th on Netflix for season 5. I've not seen this show. This is one you've seen, isn't it?
Yeah, I've seen the four seasons, really enjoyed them. I did a podcast on it. Looking forward to that very much. Basically, like if you took kind of the concept of a Real Housewives show, but made it a dramedy, because it's got comedy in there and stuff as well. Because it's arguably got similar aspects. It's just not got the whole reality angle around it. But it's a very good show anyway. So I'm looking forward to when that comes back.
Yeah, Working Moms season 5, Tuesday 15th on Netflix. Black Summer season 2 of that, which is the zombie show from the people behind Z Nation, that is back for a second season. That's on the 17th of June. That lands over on Disney Plus on Star, actually, the musical TV show from Empire Creator, which I think ran on, I can't remember which, it was one of the five, I think it was five USA ran it over here, ran the first two seasons and then dropped top the third. All three seasons are now landing on Star on Disney Plus on the 18th of June. This will be the first time the third season has actually aired in the UK. So if you want to go and watch that final season, if you watch the other two on Five USA, you can now catch that 18th of June on Star on Disney Plus. Also on Star on Disney Plus on the 18th of June, you have Love Victor season two starting. So that will be landing on there if you want to continue the story of that. Handmaid's Tale finally returns to Channel 4. That's for season 4. That's on the 20th of June at 9 p.m. That comes back. Over on Stars Play, Godfather of Harlem season 2 lands on the 20th of June, so you can catch up with that. That's got Forrest Whitaker in it as the infamous crime boss Bumpy Johnson. Rick and Morty lands 21st of June at 10 p.m. as we mentioned earlier. That is on E4. That's going to be followed at 10:30 by Harley Quinn on E4 as well. And then over on Sky Comedy on the 22nd of June at 9 p.m, we have Betty landing for season 2. That is the skateboarding comedy series set in New York about a bunch of diverse women who never get their lives through the male-dominated world of skateboarding. That comes to Sky Comedy on 22nd of June at 9 p.m. So that's everything we have for this week. If they want to find more about your stuff, where can they find you, Matt?
You can go to entertainmenttalk.org or look for us on podcast platforms as well, doing TV, video games, films, and maybe not a podcast. UnitedCast is on a bit of a break until we decide to sell or buy players, which is going to be a slow process, so don't expect that anytime soon. But got the Euros going on at the moment. I won't be doing a podcast on that particularly unless we win it or I don't know, something like that happens. But for other stuff as well, we're doing like Breaking Bad at the moment, Fear the Walking Dead. Well, by the time you hear this, actually the finale will have gone out for season 6, so I'll be covering that. I do also stream on Twitch sometimes as well. I'm doing the Last of Us 2 run at the moment. That's on eTalk UK on Twitch, and you can find the streams later archived on Entertainment Talk Place. So go and check that stuff out if you'd like to.
Yeah, go and check all that stuff out over there. For Bex, you can go to twitch.tv/TristaBytes. That's BYTES. For all the her daily streams and fun and messing around over on there and in various evenings as well, go and check her out on twitch.tv/TristaBytes. For Daryl, you can go to HollywoodNorthNews.net for all those TV series you love which are shot in Canada. He covers all that over there at HollywoodNorthNews.net. And for us, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.